If green is your favourite colour or your way of living, then Grounded is the place for you. From big environmental solutions to your own backyard, wherever in the universe you may be, join me, Melanie Walker, on a journey to a cleaner, greener life. Grounded, your window on the environment. And a very, very warm welcome to you. And yes, it's that wonderful time of the month when we get together and chat to Carrie Goodwin from Life is a Garden. And a garden. And I think over lockdown, life proved for many people to be all about their garden. Did you find that, Carrie?
We have been so amazingly blessed because people did find their gardens. I think that, you know, in the hustle and bustle of life, we kind of, our garden was there, but we never really got time to enjoy it, or we were too busy. And if it was, you know, it didn't seem that people loved gardening the way they do now, or loved maybe their plants as much as they do. But then when they were locked down and, you know, the continuing months after that, they actually found that plants are living and they could relate to them and they could see how they grow. And I mean, so many people started veggie gardens, which, because they couldn't get shops, they didn't want to go to the shops. So we had a rush on vegetables and then fruit trees, because now everybody wants to grow their own. But then it actually became the beauty of your garden. So what flowers could I plant that make me going to, you know, I'm happy to be at home now. And how can I enjoy my garden the best? And then it was your garden showing off your personality. And I was going to say, the nursery industry is smiling. We are very, very happy, not only because of the lovely customers that we've got to meet over these last few months, but also the rain that we're having.
Oh, the rain has been fantastic. I love it. Except, of course, it knocks all of the jacaranda blooms down into the garden, and it's just a mess the whole time, especially if you live underneath one and then you walk out and you slide. So watch out if you live under a jacaranda tree, and you're not going to fall on your bum. But it is what you're saying. I mean, like, my garden has always being, you know, chaos, but it works. And my vegetable garden obviously became my herb garden, should I say, more so than my vegetable garden, has always been a big thing for me. But I planted out a lot of bulbs as well, the winter bulbs. And of course, everybody now wants, I want to plant lilies in my garden. I'm like, well, you're a bit late for that, okay? Yes. You should have done that in winter. But it's fine. Now you can go out and put in your amaryllis, or you can put in a whole bunch of different stuff.
Zephyranthus. Dahlias.
Dahlias are fantastic. Although, just make sure you've got well-draining soil, because with the amount of rain that we're having and may still have, they might go a bit off rot.
Oh, okay.
That's one thing. But I look out my garden. First of all, I had all my amaryllis, the fireworks, bright red. Yes. Now I've got all the yellows and oranges of the lilies.
Yes, and then even when you go yellows and oranges, you've got the, you know, your seeded varieties like your marigolds, if we talk about bedding plants. And then the what Life of the Garden was talking about was the Alströmeria.
Oh, they're looking fantastic at the moment, the Inca lilies.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness me.
I wanted to say, I've never seen so many colors, and I'm not a person for pastel colors. I quite like the bold and in your face. But they've got beautiful, like, creams and whites and pinks, and I'm like, oh. This is very, very peaceful in a garden compared to the fireworks that might be the oranges and yellows and brightness that come from, which are also found in Alströmeria as well.
Yes.
And you know, the other one that is doing so amazingly well is cannas.
A lot of people don't like cannas, I think, because they become a bit scruffy, and that's one of the problems. The leaves get torn and they go a bit brown, but I have seen some wonderful ones. But the ones with the dark purple leaves and the bright red flower up against a white wall.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that is beautiful.
Well, we had customers and they were comparing some chairs that we have in the nursery, and they were like, oh, these are such 1960 chairs. And then when I went to go and look around the nursery and then I saw the cannas, I thought, oh, these cannas are like 1960s plants. They kind of go with the chairs and they're bright and bold in colors. And I thought maybe it's time, like, for a yesteryear, you know, if you have that little place in your garden which makes you think of maybe your grandparents or times long ago, then you could have this beautiful chair and the bright cannas. And they're pretty hardy, which is quite nice as well. They're a bit of a forgiving plant, because I was speaking to somebody this morning and I was saying, oh, no, I think you're killing your plant with too much TLC. He says, yeah, that could be it. I said, some plants just need neglect to thrive. And it sounds like an oxymoron, but actually it's very true. I think sometimes we just love our plants so much that we give them too much water, or we overfeed them.
Mm.
And all they're trying to do is say, just let me be. Leave me
alone.
Show you that I can do it all by myself.
Yes.
Like teenagers. Yeah.
But it would be quite interesting to have, like, I mean, imagine planting a 50s garden.
Yeah.
Or a 60s garden. Or definitely for the 2000s, it's going to be lots of succulents.
And, I mean, even the succulents, the different varieties, because I think because we've been having such a lovely season, the growers are realizing that people are looking for different things. You know, they don't only want the old-fashioned plants now. They want something new. And you know the Senecio, the string of beads?
Yes.
So now you get a string of dolphins and a string of big beads and a string of little beads. And I'm thinking, there's just too many strings here. You know, but all of them look amazing in hanging bowls, whether it's inside your house, outside your house. We have our succulent growers growing them as well as our indoor plant growers growing them. And I think that's quite a – when I first thought, I was like, this is not a succulent, but actually it is a succulent, and it does really nicely in both conditions. So the plants, again, are quite forgiving, and you just have to acclimatize them to the garden that they're in.
Did you find that you had a lot of people wanting to buy indoor plants? In fact, has it gone up in the indoor plant sales compared to previous years?
Yeah, this would have been probably one of our best indoor plant sales years, because I think people were converting their homes into offices. And so if you're stuck in the same space all the time, you just want something to make it different. And then also because I think maybe within your offices, you know, maybe people provided plants there and now it's in your home and you don't want to be surrounded by your computer and then your TV and all these screens that we have without reducing some of the radiation that might come from it. Whereas indoor plants provide a buffer for that. And so we've sold, I mean, when I look at the indoor plants growers list, some of them now, I'm thinking, my goodness, what are we going to buy? It's just all sold out. And so they just had an incredibly bumper season. And lots of lovely, again, old-fashioned plants, you know, like those Ficus robusta, which is definitely a 50s, 60s plant.
I've had one from, I think I've told you about it. I bought it in 1984. It's still in the same pot, and it's still going strong, and it's in my daughter's bedroom.
Yeah. But and now, you know, you've got black-leafed ones and variegated pink-leafed ones and variegated cream ones. And then the traditional just plain green. So you've got lots of variety that you can choose for your indoor plants. The one that Life as a Garden is talking about this month, which for me is also, again, I want to say an old-fashioned plant, is the croton.
The croton, the one with the variegated foliage and stuff, but I mean, those are, I always think of those as being an outdoor plant. I mean, I know definitely down on the south coast or in Natal, you see them out in the gardens and adding splashes of color when there's no flowers.
Yeah. So in Gauteng and in your cooler climates in the winter, then you would have them as your indoor plants. And again, they're also croton banana because it's got that leaf that looks like a banana and it's bright yellow with the green streaks in it. And then you've got croton petrol, which has got a beautiful big leaf, you know, traditional leaf shaped, but then it's not green at all. It's also got oranges and yellows in it. And so they are plants that kind of you want to put in your home because they're going to just add so much excitement and liveliness. Because I think some people don't always want a green plant in their home. And sometimes they have those spaces which are a little bit darker. And we say to them, you know, the only thing you can put there is a green plant and it's never going to flower. And then they'll say, but I just need something else. And so the croton would be incredible for that because there's just so many different varieties and so many different colors. And, I mean, when we're talking indoor plants, the one that I also think is interesting because plants tell you if they're happy or not. So I have a customer, not a customer, a friend's mom, and she's got the anthurium. And she's had it for many, many years, and it looks incredible. And I've had mine for 2 years, and it really doesn't look incredible anymore. And
you shouldn't be telling people that.
No, but I can't get it to flower the same color. So my flowers go green. And then I've been trying to figure it out why. And it's because I've put it somewhere that's too dark in my house. So now I'm moving it slowly to where it gets a bit more light. And the flowers are slowly starting to go back to their green, well, green and white is what the color that they're supposed to be. And I thought, even me who's been in the industry for so long, the plant is still telling me what it wants and not what I want to do with it. And I thought, sure, your plants do talk to you.
This is the thing. I mean, so many people think, oh, they'll just go and buy plants and then they're to keep them inside. And then they go and put them on the windowsill where it gets boiling hot sun during the day, and then they can't understand why it's not doing very well. But I think there is a trend for people to go for foliage-colored plants rather than plants that are going to be flowering, especially, as you said, when it comes to indoors, because not very many plants will actually flower inside. And one that I love, of course, is coleus. And I think most people get confused between crotons and coleus. But I mean, would you be able to keep coleus indoors as well?
Not so much. The leaves are a little bit softer, but now what they've done with the coleus, which is amazing, is we used it originally as a replacement for the impatiens when, you know, they had the downy mildew. And now they've got sun coleus. So you've got coleus with these
Really? Like they brought out sun patients as
yes.
well? Oh, okay.
So you've got, coleus comes in henna colors, lime greens, dark purples with the green in it, and so many different colors, but now you've got them for the shade, for the sun, as perennials, as bedding plants.
That's what I was going to ask, because somebody asked me the other day, but surely a coleus is actually an annual? And I said, I don't think so, because mine keeps coming back. Maybe it just goes dormant in winter and then pops out again.
Yeah, so I was going to say mine did as well. So traditionally they were basically just as bedding plants. Mm. And in the wintertime, especially in Gauteng and your colder regions, they would have died. But now they seem to actually last longer and you get much taller ones. You know, our bedding plant ones didn't used to grow much bigger than 20 centimeters. Mm. Now you get coleus that are, you know, put in a pot or something like that, and they probably grow up to 40, 50 centimeters at least. And they're just amazing.
Mm.
I mean, and I think the contrast, if you're looking for color with foliage, you know, when you put coleuses with maybe something that's got a gray leaf, like Stachelstomata, the lamb's ear.
Yes.
Oh, what's that other old one? Dusty Miller.
Yes.
Cineraria.
Yeah.
You know, that gray and then the red or the lime. Oh, it's so beautiful.
I like surrounding a dark purple agapanthus with the lime green coleus.
Oh, wow.
Works really well.
Yeah. Now I was going to say, you're getting onto what the life as a gardener is talking about as well.
We'll leave the shady ladies away for a moment and get back into the sunny spots in the garden. Agapanthus. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody says, and I know, I mean, it is without a shadow of a doubt. Okay, I mean, obviously the other one would be in the shade. Your favorite one outdoors in the shade?
Outdoors in the shade, azalea.
No.
Sorry.
A South African plant.
Plectranthus.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank goodness, I almost failed that test.
Right, so Plectranthus, obviously,
yes.
Indigenous, lovely for the shade. But agapanthus are, without a shadow of a doubt, just the best plant in the world ever.
Yeah. And I think the fact that there's actually so many colors now, like my brother said to me yesterday, he says, Cass, all we want is the traditional light blue or sky blue colored agapanthus. We don't want any fancy colors. And I was like, I can't find that one. I can find purple. I can find purple with dark purple, light purple, lilac, blue and white, you know, the twister ones.
Yes.
I can find dark navy blue, yeah. All these colors. He says, I just want the old-fashioned one. I'm like, okay, I'll keep trying looking.
Just a straight aggie.
Yes. And I think because it's so versatile,
you
know, I think in the cards, Andy DeVette, he's probably trying to breed a pink one. And
he
I think
is.
He's probably very close to getting it. And I know earlier in the year he released a new purple one. I can't think what its name was, but Purple Rain or something like that. And it's just beautiful, beautiful. But there's just every shade of blue, purple, white that you could come across in agapanthus and size.
And yes, size, because you get the ones which are as tall as me, and you get the little ones which you can put in the front of your bed as well, the Tom Thumbs, and what's the blue one called?
The Bingos are quite small, and then you get the double diamonds, which are also short ones.
They're all fantastic, I must say. Yeah.
And what's amazing with them is that they're indigenous, very water-wise, and, you know, in the winter, there's just those beautiful green foliage, so they just keep on giving. And what's surprising for me is you were talking about how well they do in the sun, obviously, but a lot of people plant them under trees and on pavements, and they actually still look incredible.
Mine are fabulous out in the back garden.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think, when I always think of one friend, she always used to recommend a hebe as a present. If you're giving somebody a plant, she liked giving hebes because she thought they were indestructible as a plant. And I'm thinking, actually, an agapanthus as a gift is probably even more indestructible and more rewarding.
Yeah.
Because you could, if you wanted to, even cut the flowers off and bring them in your house to use in a vase. And
if you leave them there, then the seed heads look fantastic.
Yeah.
And you can divide them and share with your friends.
Exactly. So they are the ultimate plant, actually.
Yeah.
I think.
There's nothing. Yeah. I've said it before, I'll say it again. As far as Alan Titchmarsh is concerned, it's sex on stalks.
They you just are. Embarrassed me. Never going to be able to look at an agapanthus again.
Aggie's panties, no. But I find my garden goes through phases of colors in the garden. It's a very basic green garden, but then I'll have reds that come through. Then the yellows will pop out. And then all the blues and the whites start coming through because, of course, that's the coolest kind of color scheme you need for the heat of summer in South Africa, well, not just in South Africa, in Johannesburg specifically. So the purples are all looking fantastic as well.
Well, actually, it's so surprising you say that, because on the way here, I was thinking, for me, November always seems to be a cool month in the garden.
Mm.
It is all your blues, your lavenders are all flowering, your agapanthuses are starting to flower, your scabiosa are looking amazing. It's all those very peaceful, cooling colors. And maybe it's because it's one of the hottest months of the year, and that's why we've got that contrast of these plants not making it hotter. They're actually saying, come and be in your garden and enjoy the coolness of it, rather than the explosion of heat that normally comes in our warm colors of spring.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love it. And then we'll go into midsummer, and then that's when the, I've gone blank on the name, then they get those beautiful red and pastely pink colored flowers, Pride of India.
Oh, yes, those are coming.
Yes.
We are waiting.
But then you get that somnolent kind of quiet time through the garden as well.
Yeah.
But purple is one of those colors. It's kind of, it is vibrant, but it is a cool color.
Mm.
And there's so many different varieties of things. I always wait for the convolvulus blue my mind as well, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, but even the traditional convolvulus, I mean, we've got it in a flower bed at the nursery, and there's a customer's garden that I drive past everywhere, every time on the way to work, and she's put it on her pavement. And it's just a mass of purple flowers permanently. And it's as this, almost as the sun is rising, so the flowers are opening, and at the end of the day, then they close again. I think that is gorgeous.
Yeah, you've got to color scheme your garden.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay, we were talking earlier about veggie gardens as well. So what is on the menu?
Yay, one vegetable that I actually do enjoy in this month, which is
great. What it could be.
And it's beetroot.
Okay.
Yeah, so actually I love beetroot. It's one of my favorite plants to eat. And now that I know I can eat the leaves in a salad as well, it's
or
quite
have
a
it
bonus.
Like spinach.
Yeah, maybe not.
Okay, I've told you, add some potato to it, a teaspoonful of peanut butter. You will love it.
Okay.
Onions, fry your onions and garlic, do the leaves, put some potato, boiled potato.
So I couldn't add the tin caramel that I've got in the car on the seat next to me with it instead.
If you dry the leaves out and maybe cover them in chocolate, I mean, that might be a way of doing
it. More my style.
Yeah, I don't know so much.
But the beetroot, it grows so easily.
Mm.
You know, we've got the golden one as well now, if you worry about the staining. But then also, when I was reading about it for Life as a Garden, they were saying that it's not a huge feeder, because actually if you give it too much food or too much water, you're just producing leaves.
Yes.
So again, it's one of those plants that's actually probably going to do better with a little bit of neglect, because you want the root itself to start growing deeper and get bigger. So you want to water it less frequently but for longer to get it to grow deeper. And then, you can use it as you suggested, all those different things.
I like them roasted. I like them just sliced when they've been boiled. I think beetroot, but the best is making dragon's blood. You juice it and you put ginger in it and a little bit of apple juice. You'd like it, I promise you. It's very earthy. It's really good for you as well. Yeah? She's looking at me like I'm mad.
Doesn't that change the color of your urine, though? And that's not maybe a healthy thing.
No.
Okay. But
next you'll be saying we shouldn't be eating asparagus. I mean, really.
Actually, I quite like asparagus too, but that one is quite challenging to grow, I think.
It is.
So.
And it does taste best when you've grown it and you pick it out of the ground straight away and eat it raw. That is the best.
Wow.
Absolutely the best. Don't even bother cooking it. You eat it straight, snap it out the ground. It is fantastic. But yes, growing it is a trial. We've been trying for a couple of years, but you have to give it at least 3 years while you're growing it to actually get it to produce enough stalks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel that's a challenge, though. Yeah. I like the idea of trying to grow asparagus that I could eat fresh and raw.
This is the thing. I mean, people say to me, what do you grow in your garden? And I say, anything that is actually easy to grow. Because they're all, I don't want any finicky messing about and this, that, and the other. I want to grow something which grows relatively fast. That's why I've given up on potatoes. They take forever and it's just not worth it. Okay. Seriously. Sweet potatoes, yes, they grow like weeds. It's fantastic. But ordinary potatoes, one does not have time for that. Sorry.
Well, I've still got my potatoes in a pot that I've been growing since June or July.
I had mine in for like 8 months and nothing happened, and I just thought, no, the hell with this. So anything which grows quickly, doesn't need a lot of looking after, and is very rewarding. And I mean, that's why I always say to people, have herbs. You can go and pick them up, put them fresh into your food. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of plants that people think that are very finicky, and they aren't. And they tend to have the problems with them because they spend too much time frittling around with them. And one of those, of course, is roses.
Too true.
And everybody thinks that roses are so difficult to look after, and they're not. Mm-hmm. You can just leave them alone. Mine's doing its own thing. I don't think I even pruned them. I did a very light prune on my icebergs.
Yeah.
They are resplendent at the moment.
Oh, yeah, I mean, amazing.
But October, November, definitely rose month. But the problem that most people, I'm sure you've been getting coming in, what is eating the leaves on my roses?
And it feels quite early for them, to the bugs to be out.
Yeah, it's not Christmas yet, is it?
No, exactly. So it is the rose beetle.
Mm, Christmas beetle.
Christmas beetles. And
Those little copper color things which you could tie a string around the leg and let it fly in circles when you were a kid. Did you not do that?
No, that sounds like cruelty to animals. So not going to happen.
And when you hold them and they try and buzz, like burrow through your fingers to get out again. Funny little things.
No, I was going to say, the worst we do is if we have customers and they don't want to use any pesticides on it.
Stamp on it.
I tell them to put a light near their roses and the bucket underneath, and that to me also feels like cruelty to animals, but it works really well.
But then people say, what kind of light must we have outside? Does it need to be a solar light? Can we use a candle? Does it need to be one? What kind of light do you use, and why is it going to go to the light and fall into the bucket of water? I've also given this advice to people.
Oh goodness!
But then the questions come, and you're like, I don't know.
I said, just the customer we had now, as I was on my way here, I said to her, just use a torch, even would be fine, because maybe you don't have an outside light in your rose garden, so go and put a torch there with a bucket close by. And see, I'm sure that would work perfectly well too. Yeah. There's no specific light.
Little bit of dishwashing liquid in the water, of course, just to break the surface, so they fall down into the water and they drown.
Yeah, but otherwise there are pesticides you could go and use if you wanted to go and ask your local garden center, and they would be able to recommend something as well that might have a longer residual period.
Yeah.
Because maybe you don't want to turn on the light all the time.
But would you use a systemic or a spray?
Generally contact. So, not systemics.
Okay.
We recommend contact sprays because the beetles will come and crawl over the stem or onto the flower or onto the leaf or take a munch. So the contact sprays seem to work the best. And they don't have a long period that they're going to sit on the leaves. And generally, they wouldn't, you're going to spray the leaves and the stem and not the flowers. So they shouldn't have too much effect on any of the bees that are coming in the middle of the day. Like for me, what was amazing with our roses is they were sprayed last week. And Ludwig came and did everything for us. He's fantastic, or his team is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't even like 2 or 3 hours later, the bees were already back there looking for pollen. And I thought it meant that they did such a good job. They didn't spray the flowers. The bees looked very happy still. You know, they weren't even repelled by the garlic. I was repelled by the garlic smelling roses that were
I love
in the nursery.
That's another wonderful purple plant that's going to start looking really fantastic soon, the Tolbachia, the wild garlic with the purple. And there's also that beautiful pale pink and the variegated leaves of those. Oh, I get all excited about that. But back to roses, it's interesting because, I mean, Ludwig's has got the Rose Lovers page on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
And I love it that people will ask for advice, and you've got all these people who are giving advice, and then of course Ludwig goes and gives the advice, but everybody else is still giving advice after that. I'm like, surely
is
you
the
want
champion.
Just listen to what Ludwig says, okay?
Yeah.
Don't bother with everybody else saying, oh, it's this. But with the Christmas beetles, they sit there and they go, well, I never see them. I can't see what's eating. Well, yeah, because they happen at night.
Exactly.
So you're going to have to get out there with your torch at night and go and find them, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good
that
Lord.
Is lovely. When you talk about Facebook page, one of the most popular ones for Life as a Garden is one that's called Seasonal Gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And people can post anything they want, any questions there, whether it's for indoor plants, outdoor plants. And I think it's quite a nice group to just enjoy your garden. If you're enjoying your garden and you have questions about it, it's a seasonal gardening page that was created by Life as a Garden.
And it's just called, is it just
seasonal
gardening?
Yeah, I think we started it because we wanted to talk about, you know, so gardeners remembered summer, autumn, winter, spring, and what should be happening in summer, autumn, winter, spring.
Seasonal Gardening South Africa.
South Africa, there we go.
Yeah.
And but actually it's just a lovely page to go and post, you know, I saw this in my neighbor's garden, I don't know what it is, please can somebody help me? And there's quite a lot of experts on the page as well within our industry who can help with good advice, as well as then gardeners who just have good home remedies, good stories that they want to share. So it's a page that's doing really nicely for gardeners at the moment.
There's a proliferation of these kind of, I mean, one of my favorites is Living Seeds.
Yes.
They've got the veggie gardeners and people going on there and asking about ordinary plants, and you're like, okay, this is for vegetable gardeners. But then the people will put up things, and it's quite some fights that kind of originate out of this whole thing about, like, how do I do this and how do I do that and what is eating my plants? And I mean, Sean is really, Sean Freeman from there, he's really on the ball as well. So I would suggest that as a fantastic site to go and visit if you are looking for answers to
vegetable problems.
Vegetables, yeah.
Yeah. When you talk about the vegetables, and actually it makes me think, because Sean was the one who sold the first red maize plant, popcorn.
Yes.
And then, like, I was reading in the Life as a Garden newsletter, and they were saying about Three Sisters planting. And I thought, I've never heard of that. And it was a Native American way of planting corn, beans, and your squashes.
Yes.
So you plant your corn, which becomes the stem or
the trellis, which will grow.
Yes, the trellis for the beans.
Yeah.
And then the squashes provide the shade for the plants underneath and almost like a ground cover to keep your soil moist and cool.
Yeah.
I thought that was miraculous. I feel like doing that as well in my garden.
It is a lovely thing. A friend of mine wanted one of those gardens. She got into the whole kind of Native American shaman, whatever, whatever. And I said, okay, fine, I'll do a garden like this. And we put one together. It was very, very successful.
Yeah.
But then you need to remember that you need to also find out what you would do in wintertime in that particular garden, because your corn and squashes, beans,
yeah, they won't be there.
They won't be there in the winter months. That's another thing, is people forgetting. That's why the seasonal gardening thing is actually a nice idea, because everybody like, oh, but I wanted to plant these, and why are my broad beans not working now? I'm like, wrong time of year.
Yes, yeah.
And then I had Paige Nick, who's a wonderful writer. She's putting up on Living Seeds. My cauliflowers, look how small my cauliflower is. Look at this. I'm like, well, because it's a cool weather plant, and we're like in the middle of summer now.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. And so it is one of those things. Why is my cauliflower not doing well? Because it's too hot.
Oh, because it's a new variety of small cauliflower.
Yes.
Miniature baby, everything.
Little mini cauliflowers. You can eat them like a Brussels sprout.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, yeah. So for all of these wonderful things that Carrie's been telling us about, of course, you can get onto the website, lifeisagarden.co.za.
Mm-hmm.
And ask all your questions there. And I'm sure that Carrie would also be happy to field a lot of them.
Anytime.
As I do too.
It's all wonderful.
A wonderful community of gardeners. Mm. And I mean, I think that amongst all of the industries, I think the gardeners are the ones that are more prone to helping other people when they can't get something right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love our industry. I've been in it for a long time. But to me, we don't have competition. We're all just friends. So if I can help another nursery or somebody else, a grower, that's what we are. Because actually, I just want everyone to garden.
Yeah.
That's the point.
That's what it's all about.
Everyone has to own a plant of some sorts.
And if you don't, you're in big trouble with Carrie.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you so much. I hope I can see you again next month, so we can tell people what to be doing and how to look after their garden specifically as well if they're going away. If we're allowed to go away, if we don't go back into lockdown.
Oh, please not.
I know. Our children would be very disappointed.
Yeah.
Carrie, thank you so much. Always
thank
an absolute
you for having
pleasure.
Me.
And I'm sure that Carrie will absolutely back me up on this when I say, go out there, get in your garden, have fun, but above all, stay grounded. Bye-bye.
For sure.
You've been listening to another episode of Grounded from Solid Gold Studios in Johannesburg. For more green ideas and events, pop along to Mel's Treasures on Facebook.